This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
I'd like to thank my teacher, Shauna, her teacher, Beata. Or no, I'm sorry. Her teacher was Blanche Hartman. And then my teacher, Beata, and Doug, especially Doug. And, we've come a long way, and we have yet farther to go. Today I was, going to talk about dependability, and then I looked on the website and it said the intersection of East and West religions. I was like, wait a minute, that was something that I did a while ago, but maybe I can incorporate the two. So, I have a very poor attempt of making a bridge between the two, but I'm sure it'll be fine. Basically, I've been thinking about dependability quite a lot recently, especially right now. When, as many of you know, I'm disabled. I don't know what might have clued you to that disability thing. But because of that, my parents generally take care of me, so I depend a lot on my parents. Thank you, Mom. Thank you, Dad. Thank you, Dad. Right now, they're off in, I think they're in Paris right now. Depending on what time it is, it's probably around 3 p.m. 9 p.m., 3 p.m. They might be visiting the catacombs. My mother's been, but my father has never been. So that'll be exciting for him. In any case, since they're gone, I've had to rely on my friend Sarah a lot, who's around here somewhere. My dependency on others has shifted as I became more and more disabled. So I have to rely on them, in this case, Sarah, for assistance getting food or getting, like, if I leave a glove or something somewhere, it's not so easy for me to just go and pick it up. I have to ask her. That's been a very humbling experience, just knowing that in other circumstances, I wouldn't have to rely on other people. Other people wouldn't have to be dependable for me. But it's very important and that I do at this point. And I tried to show my appreciation for her be a dependable source of assistance for me. And I try to show that through having a meal with her, asking her how her day is, really engaging with her one-on-one, answering any of her questions, looking her in the eye, just sort of that sort of thing that one should do by default. It's, I consider it kind of right speech and right action to do that kind of thing. So it's a little bit easier for me since I regularly practice that type of thing. I try to be very right in my speech and action. Some things I find helpful are not listening to news every morning and really taking it to heart because it's painful, quite honestly. To listen to all the hurt in the world. And I really feel that that's something that in our modern culture is highly valued. I'm not sure why it's highly valued, quite honestly. It's like we want to put ourselves in pain. And I find that a little bit odd. But it does help. I try to remind myself of all the good things that I in the world that I can experience. And I feel that's very much an Eastern culture. It's not so self-indulgent. And just looking in a mirror all the time. It's more of self-reflective, like analyzing what's going on in oneself. And I really enjoy sort of looking at those things instead of being so fixated on what's next, which I do have to think about anyway, but I prefer not to. So mostly, one of the things I think of as being dependable and being the receiver of the dependability is to be to remove yourself and not be demanding of everything you need at the time, like understanding what you need, but also being prepared not to get every single thing that you need. Trying to figure out how to put this best in words. Being appreciative of what others can do and not being restricting them in doing exactly how you feel something should be done. Like, for example, getting to Jikoji from home. I live in Palo Alto, and to get here the quickest is to go sort of southeast as the bird flies. But there are multiple roads to Jikoji. Ultimately, like, I could take freeways, could take back roads, and not being super picky about which route should be taken. It's not like it is about the journey, but it's not only about the journey. It's not about completely about the journey or the destination. Sort of all of them combined. It's about the whole picture. I thought about coming in and just saying, this is it. But decided that would be pretty dull. Dull 40 minutes or so. In any case, this is it does have to do with dependability in that what you get is what you get. You should be happy about that. And sure, you can maybe have a slightly better this or a slightly better it, but ultimately it's good just to have this in it and is. So, yeah, are there any questions I could talk about? Wow.
I have a question.
Back here.
Okay. I
Back
have a
here.
question over here behind the
Behind
screen.
the screen.
High screen.
That the wisdom ran deep that you talked about. Thank you so much. Brought tears to my eyes. Do you I wonder if you can answer this question. That's a lot of wisdom. Is that from Zen practice? Is it from living with your disability? Is it from the people that help you, or is it some also other things? Where is that great depth of wisdom from? Thank you.
It's a really good question. So the question is where the wisdom comes from, if it's from disabilities and practices, the people that help out, or what, where is it from, basically? Am I correct in
yes,
that?
Yes, thank you.
I would say that by and large, the wisdom stems from the people that assist me, because it's always growing. And I mean, not everybody that's disabled is wise per se. I will say, having encountered other disabled people, the ones I find to be wiser, and this was a conscious choice I made as well, are those that have chosen the path of joy and happiness rather than resentment. Because, yeah, it does suck being disabled and chair-bound or bed-bound or whatever-bound. But if you try to enjoy, make the best of it, that wisdom will come up and show through. And it often leads to sort of revelations and awakening experiences that a lot of, like Buddhism, also relies on becoming awakened. So when you do become awakened from being disabled or from being awakened to something you can no longer do differently, Buddhism helps show you, just expand that field a bit more. So you're not just focused on the wisdom of that small awakening in that context, but with Buddhism, it has yet another context that you can apply that awakening to. So it becomes more expansive. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you so much.
I'm not sure it's a question, but it's a thank you. Quite a teaching.
And thank you.
I really appreciate the metaphor of all the different ways here to justice. I really appreciate all the different ways to get here. And in terms of practice, how my the things that I think of as my disabilities, my challenges, are different than yours and different than anybody else, but not really. And that they're there, they're arising, they're here, so that I can learn how to grow in them. And you're a really good example for me of growing in them. So,
Pamela, you're always a big inspiration to me.
This kind of all relates to what you said about the big picture and the path. You can get all kinds of paths. And not to be too focused on the destination or the path. I don't know, somehow this ties into what you were talking about the wisdom of allowing your circumstances, whatever they are, to lead to some type of unfolding. Growth, whatever you want to call. Not that really a question.
Another person I'd like to point out is Mira, who's online. And it's also a big strength to me in that she has also chosen a similar path of happiness and joy. And I really, really appreciate that kind of mentality. It opens a lot of other paths and opportunities to just not always be cranking. I don't want to go there. What are you doing? That kind of attitude doesn't help anybody unless it's in that specific scenario, an example of what one should not be super focused on doing. One of the great awakenings and lessons that I learned recently was inspired by a friend of mine who asked how to not respond angrily to other people, and something, a solution I came up with was to allow yourself a little bit of grace and think about the situation beforehand and say, okay, I will probably get angry, but I will back up and then go back and say, all right, I'm sorry. I hear what you're saying. So not being stuck in the moment, but sort of pre-think of your moment reactions And of course, pause, think about them, and hopefully that window will shrink until you're just resting in a good way. So if I think about resting in a good way in the beginning, and afterwards I think about how I should have reacted in a good way, eventually that window will close until it's in the moment I just automatically react in a good way. So that's what I realized when I was talking to her, and what I realized was advice I should take myself and give myself. So it wasn't necessary revelatory. It was something I was kind of already doing, but it was definitely, I had not put it to words.
The thing is, just when you think you've got it under control, you're able to see it coming, and you know you're there, and then one day you just lose it. So, you know, this is something that I've just experienced, and it's like there's a lesson here. It's like you're not there, but I'm using it to help me get past that the next time. But it doesn't creep up on you. It just kind of hits. And for me, that was very jarring, because that's not my MO. I don't usually go there, but I got triggered and I was a little disappointed in myself. So all this to say, it's a lesson to look at it from every angle and work on it, and you know, just I think every bad thing that happens has within it great growth. So you're a major example of that, and thank you for, you know, putting it out there the way you do, because we tend to complain about aches and pains, and you know, it's part of our vocabulary, and it's good to think about switching it over to gratitude. Thank you.
Thank you. That actually reminds me of a thing about to say, like, it's all right, give yourself permission to be angry every once in a while. I have yet to be a single person, and priests included, that does not get angry.
We're human.
It's about, yeah, we are human. That's the ultimate of it. And it's good to just see that you got angry, maybe after the fact, maybe long after the fact, years could go by. But if you see it and then sort of approach it again and say, okay, what can I learn from this? That's all that really matters. Doesn't matter particularly that you never be angry again. Just matters that you saw that you were angry and why, and got something out of it. Hopefully you will not be angry in the future.
Or very, you know, a very long space in between. No, there's something about it that, what, it's about me. Something about me that's making me angry.
Exactly.
Right.
It's a very good point. Something about oneself. One of the nicest compliments I got from my father was, like, at dinner I do have a tendency, I get hangry. And if, for those of you not familiar with that term, I get angry when I'm hungry. Angry.
Me too.
So, but one of the compliments that he gave me was, I make a point, I realize that I get angry, and I make a point of, like, catching myself and reapproaching the situation. So I'll be like, I don't want it. I'm not sure I want that right now.
Doubt yourself.
Yeah. Like, catch myself, back up, start over again, and try to make the reaction a bit nicer and more. I even said the words, but now I'm blank. More right speech esque.
Right speech.
I don't know if that came through, but right speech-esque.
That's great.
Right speech-ish.
Right speech-ish.
That works.
Close.
Just, I have this recent experience with my mom, and I get triggered and I get very angry. And, sometimes when you're in the moment and you get triggered and you get very angry, that can be the biggest challenge too. That seems like such a dichotomy from right speech, because what comes out of my mouth is, when I'm triggered and I'm angry like that, is anything right speech, right?
Right.
Yeah, I just don't know how to. Paradox, I guess. I don't know.
When I find myself in that situation, I just look. I may not catch it immediately, but soon I'll say, you know, I'm being very angry. That's what I mean, like, at the, before the situation even happens, if I sort of prepare myself to be angry, then I often realize that I'm angry, and then can back up and be a bit smoother and go more towards where I want to be with the right speech.
I guess that's better than not seeing the person again.
Yeah.
think there are hands online.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, there are two.
Ben, can you get up there and ask them to just unmute themselves and speak?
There's Chris and there's...
So for Chris and the other person who has their hands raised online, could you start unmute yourself?
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Ben.
No problem, Chris.
Nice to see you. I liked your story about the roads to Jikoji and... it's kind of like if you kind of are always kind of not planning anything or planning a destination, then I guess you could sit in a cave somewhere, but you're not really going anywhere. But if you get hung up on the destination, then you're never really in the moment. So I liked your, I don't remember what exactly you said about seeing it in a holistic way. It's being in the moment and having a destination at the same time. And that's kind of relates to what you were saying about being angry or frustrated, to me anyway, we have I think most of us have a goal of equanimity to have that kind of demeanor, but we're humans and we react to things and we get angry, we get frustrated, and we all succumb to that. And I also like what you said about, that doesn't mean we have to stay there. You know, just because we feel that doesn't mean we have to hold on to it and start identifying with that. When it's over, it's over, and then let's let it go and move on to the next thing. You know, we don't have to be invested in that somehow. And we don't have to be hung up on always maintaining this ideal equanimous state either, you know, because that's not genuine either. So I think that's what you were saying anyway. That's what I got, what you were saying.
Yeah.
And I think that's very, very good advice and observations. So thank you very much for that.
Thank you. Who is that?
Online, who is that? Another person online has a raised hand. Don?
Oh, Don.
You unmute yourself.
Hi, Ben. Hello, everybody. This is Don in Columbus, Ohio. And Ben, thank you for your talk today, and thank you to everyone at Jikoji and all around for supporting Ben in sharing this talk. It struck me when you were talking about disability that I'm really grateful for you taking up this call and showing up the way you did, because you've helped create a scenario where it's like, now, of course, there's a guy in a wheelchair giving a Dharma talk. And if you weren't there, and if other people who've followed the same path hadn't done so, you wouldn't be there and we wouldn't know this. We wouldn't have this. And it's made that Enso circle, you know, that image of the Enso, a whole lot bigger and a whole lot rounder just by you. So there's gratitude. A question somehow connects with that notion that this practice isn't about doing something or getting something, certainly not getting it right all the time, right in quotes, but maybe more often actually embracing the things that we get wrong and helping realization take place for all of us through the wrong stuff. making friends with it. But I'm wondering if you might give just a little bit of words to what you think your own personal contribution to this relationship between East and West, and this relationship between our practice right now and the world. You know, we're all kind of in a big traffic circle, various levels of skill, kind of negotiating our way around this traffic circle. And there's Western religion, Christianity, and all kinds of dogmas, some of which think we're just wrong for not believing in an evangelical model or some sort of model that saves people. How do you feel jhana has influenced you as a big influence in your life in doing this? And what do you think would be most helpful to us as practitioners navigating that big traffic circle? We want to make a difference, but obviously we don't want to try and save, nor can we save everything. So I'll rest that with my question.
Very good question. So for those who you're not familiar, I don't know if you got it, but John was my teacher and Don's teacher as well. So he's asking how she is related to all this, including and maybe especially between the East and West connection. And so John was from Scotland, and so very much Western in my opinion. But more than that, she and I both study a lot of religions and look at just how they interact with our reality. And something I realized the other night, when I was having dinner with my Jewish friend. Sorry, I had to dissect which religion she is. But something I found as I become more well read on the aspects of religion is that they're all saying nearly the same thing. Not exactly the same thing. God, the devil's in the details. But if you put, for example, me in the room with a Christian priest, there probably won't be much conflict. We may come out with our arms around each other. And that's something I very much enjoy. I lost where I was going with that. Except that it's a nice connection that I find that I have more and more of as I expand my my knowledge and the depth of my own practice, I find myself connecting with others more and more. And I feel strongly that jhana helps pave the path and show me a little bit more of the way to sort of grasp those different religions and explore them. Yeah, again, I feel that there was something else that Don, you said, that like really inspired an idea in my head. And now I can't think of it. As I was sitting here preparing for this talk, there's a fly buzzing around. I thought it would be hilarious if it buzzed into my mouth. And I started coughing. And then I would have brought up Blanche, my teacher's teacher, who would sit there, swat mosquitoes, go, be a Buddha, be a Buddha. So it really helped me stop worrying about the incidental killing of something that is potentially going to kill you. I'm surprised not to hear the bell. Has anybody else heard the lunch bell?
Probably in 2 minutes then.
Oh. I'm a couple minutes off. I apologize. Wait, no, I don't. That's something I try not to do much of anymore, is apologize. People know that I'm sorry, but people are also just fine with me not being perfect. I should be that way as well, because I didn't expect anybody else to be perfect. So, why do I expect others to expect me to be buried? So Don and Chris and Susan and Mira and Daryl are all part of my saga, and I'm very grateful they all came. Mira has, we've been shadowing each other as we've gone through the steps and getting our rockets and robes. My robes are in my bag, but they take forever to put on. And Mira said it perfectly. she's also disabled. And by the time I get my ropes on, I'm kind of exhausted. I can't really do anything more. That's an adventure in and of itself. So yeah, there's a lot, that's a lot of where I get my appreciation of the journey as well as the destination. Like, the destination is great and all, but I can only do so much in my journey to get there before I myself am tired. We had a few people that left very nice and quietly. I did not even notice them. Maybe I'm just talking. And there's the lunch bell.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.